It's the JT the Brick Show, broadcasting live from the Finley Cadillac Performance Studio.
Raiders bring a blitz. He takes up off the middle, and he's wrapped up from behind. Max Crosby.
Your silver and black home to sound off for over 20 years.
Open at the 35, racing to the 20, 10, touchdown Raiders.
And now, here's JT the Brick.
All right, JT, back with you, hour number two. Off a little vacation, a big vacation, no. It was a week and a half, and had a good time back east. Thanks to everybody for welcoming me back. You can watch the show via YouTube at JT the Brick YT. We are doing our summertime radio topic of the greatest Raider draft picks, most impactful draft picks of all time. Today is Sebastian Janikowski. It's a fun story to talk about his career. Really a really good career, solid career. I think 100 years from now, Raider fans will know who Sebastian Janikowski is. No doubt about it. He had that type of an impact. An Oakland Raider from 2000 through 2017. First round pick in 2000, the 17th pick overall. So that's a big deal. I mean, you're not going to see guys, all-time leading scorer. This is a draft pick. Derek Carr will be on our list somewhere. Right, we're going to have the top 10, and we're going to go through it all. So when it comes to all of this, today when I throw out a name, today I was going to do Seabass and Pete Banaszak, but we didn't have time for Pete. I'm going to do Pete tomorrow and probably throw another gentleman in. We'll figure that out later after the show. Bobby's off tomorrow. He'll be back later in the week. Wednesday is a full day of Raider Mort. We're paying tribute to Raider Mort, my longtime friend, the chairman of the board of the Raider Nation who passed away. I found out about that when I was gone. I have a severe, heavy heart on that news. So Wednesday, we'll give Mort the whole show. 2 hours on Raider Mort, and we'll get the right people in at the right time for that. We're brought to you by Tito's Handmade Vodka, the original handcrafted vodka, one of the great success stories in America. Tito's is made from corn and naturally gluten-free. I had a bunch of Tito's, my go-to on the trip. Tito'sVodka.com, distilled and bottled by Fifth Generation Inc. Austin, Texas, 40% alcohol by volume. Savor responsibly. We love Tito's. So I want to get up to this quick story about Seabass, but you're going to hear it first from John Gruden. And John Gruden, and Bobby, you cleaned this up, right? You did. I had a couple of comments in it that I'm going to get to here. Here's what John Gruden remembers on a trip I was on working with the Raiders, and I saw this up close.
We were playing when I was with the Raiders. We drafted Janikowski in the first round.
Yep.
Janikowski, he was missing field goals the first three games, and I was really pissed. So we went to play the Saints in New Orleans, and Janikowski's late for curfew. He didn't get back until 3 o'clock in the morning, so now I'm really pissed. He can't make field goals, and he can't make curfew. So we're playing, I swear, we get the opening kickoff, might have been the second possession. We get a couple first downs, and it's a 58-yard field goal, 56-yard field goal. I go, field goal. And Bob Cassullo, the special teams coach, he says, are you out of your mind? He's drunk. He can't make it. I go, field goal. I actually wanted him to miss. He hit it right down the middle. I met him on the near half. Great. Love you, brother. As long as you can play.
Only in New Orleans.
He was.
All right, so that was John Gruden via Barstool on Janikowski. So let me tell you that story. That story, as Gruden pointed out, I was hosting the pre and post game, but I was there and I threw my big party in New Orleans. The party of record by any radio host who has ever worked for the Raiders. That was Stabler, Biletnikoff. That was the famous door. It was insanity, the amount of people that we had in New Orleans on Bourbon Street. So that night, I had a wad of cash in my pocket because I had to pay Stabler and Biletnikoff for showing up. And we were boozing, and I had to work. It's 2000. I've only been with the team since 98. So believe me, I knew I had eyes on me. So the end of the night, I'm ready to go home in New Orleans, going back. And my roommate was the late, great Raider, and this is really deep, Black Hole Rob Rivera, who passed away. And he was staying in my room, and he was already in the room. And before I left, I went out onto the street, and someone said to me, you got to come here. I go, why? He goes, you got to see this. So I'm walking with a Raider employee, name will not be used, no longer with the team. And we go down a dark alley, and we make a left, and we go down another alley, and I walk into a bar, a classic New Orleans hole-in-the-wall bar. And I walk in, and I see Janikowski at the end of the bar, and he is on a rager, in a good way, right? He is throwing back shots, and I look to the wall, and there's three or four Raiders security people there, keeping an eye on him. Janikowski was not leaving. This wasn't like, hey, Sebastian, let's go. No, you wouldn't go. It's like a bull. You're not going to get him to go. So I'm watching him there, and he's doing his thing. So I'm like, wow, thanks for taking me here. This is pretty cool. And I leave, and I go back to my room. So that was before I had the double alarm set up, you know, calling down to the front desk. I need an alarm for 7. I need an alarm for 7:15. I get up, and I get on the first team bus to do the pregame show from New Orleans in the booth. I get on the bus. Everybody's talking about this. Janikowski blew through curfew. He didn't come home till late. Pull in with the bus. I walk through the tunnel out to the field. And who's there with the tank top on, kicking field goals from 50 yards and warm-ups? Janikowski. I said, man, oh, my God. How the hell is he here? And he is drilling field goals in warm-ups. I took the elevator to the top, and I watched this, and it was incredible to see. And this is when the Raiders in 2000 were really, really good. So if you look at this story and the history of the Raiders and what was going on around that time, for John Gruden to say that, wow, it was that crazy and that amazing, and I never saw anything like it. And you know, I got to know him over the years at a couple of events till he knew me on a first-name basis, and we have a little piece of a conversation that I had with him. Fabian, you're up next. Good to hear from you here today. What do you got?
Hey, JT. The thing that got me with Seabass was I remember him from college when he kicked that field goal to win it for FSU. But when he came to the Raiders, it was at, I believe it was either New Year's Eve or New Year's Day game in Kansas City. And when he kicked that game-winning field goal, it's like, that's it for me. I was sold at that point.
So that kick for you sold you on him, and that was your guy?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that, yeah. And he was your guy the whole time, right? The whole way through.
Yeah, the whole way through. It was kind of sad to see him leave. You know, yeah, there was a few kicks he didn't miss, but correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he had more 50-yarders than anyone else has.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And like you said, there's an argument for him. I would love to see him in it, but, you know, if he's not, he's still going to be the best kicker until Carlson passes him.
Yeah, and Carlson is a scorer. Thanks for the call, Fabian. Good to hear from you. I love the fact that Raider 66, Fabian's there. We want other people to participate other than the regulars. So if you're a first-time caller, you're listening, we want you to get involved on this topic as we're talking about Sebastian Janikowski today, 702-365-9200. You better believe it. I mean, if the Raiders, if and when they have a Hall of Fame, Sebastian Janikowski will be in the Raiders Hall of Fame. He doesn't have enough to get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He doesn't, because there's too many kickers in front of him. Justin Tucker, who's not in, especially Adam Vinatieri, who's going to get in. But I think of him as a Raider Hall of Famer all the time. No doubt about that. We have a little bit of sound that Bobby grabbed from Seabass when he was on with me recently. When was this, Bobby?
2018,
when Seabass joined us on the show. I was lucky enough to be outside the war room at the Raider facility when they handed me a card with your name on it as I was hosting the draft on the radio, and you were the first-round pick. Can you talk me through that when Al Davis first reached out to you, or you had an understanding? You're a great kicker, but there was a chance you could end up in the first round with the Raiders.
Now, the thing is that the Raiders never actually, talked to me before the draft. It was kind of a surprise to me. And Al Davis just took a chance on me, and Mark Davis now, the whole family, I want to thank them for taking a chance on me, because I think, I give him whatever I got.
Sebastian, that's interesting. You go from playing college football nationally, you end up in Oakland, and we'll get to the coach, John Gruden, and what was waiting for you there. When you got there, who were the first guys to reach out to you? Who were those first teammates that were your mentors when you were a rookie?
Oh, it was definitely Rich Gannon. I mean, they put my locker was right next to Rich Gannon, so he kind of take me under his wings. You know, he always talked to me and told me how to be a pro and stuff like that.
So that was a portion of our conversation with Sebastian Janikowski, one of the all-time great Raiders, 702-365-9200. When you look at the impact that he had, as I went through his stats and his career stats and everything he was able to do, he was a player, when you're kicking, it's interesting because of the access that I've had throughout my career at practice. When you're a kicker at practice, you're just out there on a field by yourself. You didn't have to worry about him. I mean, he knew how to get after it. So he was going to have a good time after practice. He was going to have a couple pops or do whatever he did. But he was always out there in a sweat, big, working out, kicking. And you felt really good about him. He wasn't a guy that you said, oh, no, God forbid we got to bring him in a game. It was just the opposite of that. And some of these long field goals, 63 in 2011, 57 in 2014. 58. If you look at his career-long field goals each year, they're all in the high 50s, but his longest one was 63 yards. And then he kicked in the postseason. He kicked in 2000, 2001, 2002, 2016, and he even kicked. He made three field goals in 2018 for Seattle. But 2001 was a really special year for him. In the postseason, he kicked in two games. He was 5 for 5, 100% there, 4 extra points. And I just wish the Raiders had him in a better scenario more often. I mean, when the Raiders had Sebastian Janikowski and Shane Leckler together via the same draft, to know that you had two guys that could win games, Shane Leckler was brilliant with his Coffin's Corner and what he was able to do. Just brilliant. And to know that Janikowski was going to be able to come through and make big kicks, you want to have a scenario like that. Janikowski and Leckler as a pair should drive a lot of conversation in the years to come about the importance of having a kicker and a punter at the same time in their prime. In the 2000 draft, Janikowski was taken number 17, Leckler number 142. That took care of the kicking game for over a decade in one draft. So when you look at the career of Al Davis and what Mr. Davis was able to do, that was the Maverick. Those are bold decisions at that time, decisions that a lot of other people don't make. All right, if you're into media, there's breaking news that I had yesterday. I put out a tweet yesterday, Bobby, last night, that all the sports media people were on vacation because they didn't have this. I had it first, but I wasn't going to put it out because I have too many people affected by this. But the breaking news now is that Fox Sports 1 just blew out 3 of their shows. So they blew out pretty much half of their lineup. And is this a big deal? It is for some. I know some people were affected by this today. You do not want to see people lose their job. But overall today, 3 shows at Fox Sports 1 are out. And if you look at the world of Stephen A. and what they're doing at ESPN and what is happening now in sports, that's a pretty big deal. So the decision comes today. Joy Taylor is out at Fox Sports. They also have gotten rid of the show Speak, Breakfast, and one more. So they got rid of their morning shows. Pretty much 2/3 of their lineup is now gone at Fox Sports 1. They canceled 3 shows. Craig Carton, Emmanuel Acho, that would be The Facility. And our friend James Jones, former Raiders on that show, and he's really good. We work with James a lot, so I'm sure he's going to do something and do great things. But Joy Taylor out at Fox Sports as Fox Sports 1 cancels 3 shows, including Craig Carton and Emmanuel Acho's. And that story broke out today. They're going to figure out what they're going to do in that time slot and what they're going to do going forward. But there is a monumental shift today. Not that certain shows are better than others. What shows are the best out there? you know, a lot of people watch certain shows, and these shows had small audiences. But it still affects a lot of people behind the scenes, including friends of mine who work as producers, grips. They're on the sets. So this is a big deal today. Those shows were not competitive when it came to a rating standpoint, but they were shows that provided entertainment. And, man, that is a grenade going off when it comes to programming at FS1 today, Bobby. And we've talked about it over the decades. You know, a lot of these shows, my wife came up with the term years ago when she walked by me watching it. She'd say, "You're the only one watching this." She was just like, "Don't worry about that." Because I got on a couple of shows throughout my career, but they're filler.
Right.
A lot of the shows fill before they have play-by-play.
Mm-hmm.
And these were three shows that were let go today, and it is blowing up, X.
You got to remember one thing. Only the strong survive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you want to have 24-hour sports programming, if you're not going to have quality programming, you aren't going to watch it. It's like we had this conversation a couple weeks ago. Do you still watch SportsCenter?
Well,
a lot of people don't anymore.
Yeah, and SportsCenter is interesting because they're not going to get rid of SportsCenter, but SportsCenter used to be appointment television. Like, if you didn't watch the 8 o'clock or 11 o'clock SportsCenter, you missed everything.
Exactly. If you didn't catch Patrick or Olbermann or something.
Yeah, you're very true. These shows, I think a lot of these shows, and again, I want to make sure this is not taken out of context because I like James Jones. So I didn't watch that show much in the morning at that time. But the other shows that were there that were filler got their ass kicked by Stephen A. Smith and other people in that space. And it started with Skip Bayless leaving Fox Sports One, which he deserved to leave because that show at the end, once they lost Shannon Sharp, and say what you will about Shannon, Shannon Sharp moved the needle in a big way over at FS1. He had a big impact on that show. And then when it broke up between Skip and Shannon, that's kind of the beginning of the end of those day parts.
Of course.
That came apart there.
But the point I'm making is that, I mean, only the strong survive. Who were the best shows on, who were the best sports in opinion going back and forth kind of shows?
Pardon the interruption, PTI.
Right. First Take. Mm. What else?
Not many.
Yeah,
not
see,
many.
That's the point. If you're going to have 17, 24-hour-a-day sport networks, you got to have compelling programming. Because otherwise, you're turning on FS1 on a Monday at 10 o'clock at night, and it's badminton or whatever it is. I mean, who the hell's going to watch that crap?
Well,
and everybody knows it's filler. That's why they're getting no numbers on it. And if all you're putting out is 18 hours, 19 hours of filler, and 5 hours of quality program, nobody's going to stick around for that stuff.
Mike Florio at Pro Football Talk reports a shakeup at FS1 has resulted in the cancellation of three shows, which featured a total of six former NFL players. Keyshawn Johnson, Mark Schlereth, Emmanuel Acho, Chase Daniels, James Jones, and LaShawn McCoy, Shady McCoy. So that's the breaking news. Joy Taylor is out at Fox Sports as FS1 canceled her show along with two others. And we'll see what happens, what they're going to do to fill it. I have an idea of what they're going to do to fill it there, but it will be another form of filler. And people now get a lot of information very quickly, 20 seconds on X, 25 seconds on TikTok. They get a lot of information there. But those shows, what I don't like about this is those shows provide jobs.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people that I know and you and I know
who
work over at the Fox lot today.
Craig Carton, for example.
People that woke up today looking for their job and their paycheck, the celebrities will get, they'll be fine. But I'm worried about the people behind the scenes who showed up every day and went into the building and tried to prepare these shows.
Well, the techs will still be able to employ because sooner or later they're going to have some kind of program to fill. They're not going to put FS1 and FS2 out of business.
But they're not going to spend that type of money.
Oh, of course not.
They're not going to hire the people that were players like that. Hopefully a few people last.
Well, techs and media are not going to make the kind of money you were making in 1980 or 1990. It's a whole different world out there.
No doubt about that. The Raiders have put out 8 minutes ago. We have waived quarterback Carter Bradley. So that's your Raider breaking news. Making roster moves. We have the camp coming up on Thursday, and we'll get going. I was just talking to Q Myers, who's coming up next. He's excited because Q's the architect of getting us out there. So we'll be doing broadcasts throughout training camp. Our morning shows, I don't have any of the details, nor it's my spot to give it to you. I just know that with my schedule, I'll be out of training camp a bunch. And then there's going to be days, Bobby, that I'm out of training camp for maybe a half hour. Then I got to get back here to do the show on the other side of town because the Raiders practice in deep Henderson. And we got to get back here to host the show certain days that the Raiders will not be able to accommodate us because they have big things going on in the building.
It's getting to be that time of year again.
It's getting to be that time of year.
And then the next few weeks are going to be crazy going back and forth between the camp, trying to get your ass over here by 12 noon. When's the first preseason game? 2 weeks? 3 weeks?
Preseason is coming up here really quickly. As a matter of fact, I have to have one of those nights tonight with my wife, and she brought it up, not me, to break out the calendar.
Yeah.
Because we'd like to get away one or two more times. I mean, you don't expect me to be here every day in this heat. Every day. It's summer, man. Mm-hmm. Got to get to the mountains, man. Got to get up to Utah. Got to get to the beach in Southern California, maybe San Diego for one more long weekend. But the preseason starts, preseason game number one. That'll be August 7th, as we'll be in Seattle. I love going to Seattle in August.
All right, so we're 23 days and counting.
Then the San Francisco 49ers come in, but that's going to be a big week. That's the biggest week of the preseason because we have the joint practice with them. So we practice
that's
with
always
the 49ers.
Fun.
That's always fun. And that'll be August 16th, preseason game number two. And then the third one, which is where those guys who have to make the team have to play their lights-out game.
Mm-hmm.
That's at Arizona. I'll be out in Glendale, and that's August 23rd.
So much for that cool air, huh?
Yeah, then we've got one more little break from August 23rd. The Raiders don't play till September 7th.
So my point is you've got about 3 weeks and 2 days to get up to speed because you're the play-by-play guy, if I'm not mistaken.
I got to do the play-by-play on the radio. It's Jason Horowitz. Goes to television. Okay, Josh Alpert's going to join us coming up next from Pro Football Talk. We'll talk to him, go around the league. I don't have a list to go over with him. I don't have a JT top 10 because we did a hell of a show today talking about Sebastian Janikowski. Thanks to all the bricklayers, everybody up there on the YouTube channel. Hey, do me a favor if you're on YouTube and you're watching us now, remind everybody that Wednesday is our tribute show to Raider Mort. We're doing Raider Mort for 2 hours. I need everybody who ever met Mort, knows Mort, get the word out for me. Get the word out. You need to do that for me. I don't ask anything. I'm asking you for to do that. Tell the world that we're doing a tribute show to Raider Mort. And when we come back, we'll dive into more NFL content as we continue on. Home Run Derby tonight. Has that jumped the shark? I say that every year because every year I watch Home Run Derby, and I'm on the air tonight on Sirius XM. It's always good. Home Run Derby is always good.
And it's not long. It's only like about an hour and a half.
Yeah, they speed it up. And I'll tell you my story about Yankee Stadium coming up before we wrap up the show as we continue on. No doubt about that. We're brought to you by Grimaldi's, the best pizza I ever had. And I was in New York. I didn't eat a lot of pizza in New York. I had the best Italian food that I've had since Vegas recently in Boston. But when I go pizza, it's Grimaldi's, the best pizza I've ever had, 4 locations here in the Valley. Thanks to Grimaldi's for being a tremendous partner and providing us $50 gift cards to give away all summer as we continue.
And now Janikowski will come in. They'll let the play clock tick down. And he'll try to make it a 6-point Raider lead from about the 20-yard line, which makes it a 30-yard attempt. Officially, this will be 29 yards out of a Leckler hold. Play clock all the way down. Snap it once. A low snap, and Leckler got it down nicely. And then Janikowski will make the Jets go all the way down the field without a timeout and 72 seconds remaining in the game.
Al Michaels on the call as Bobby's looking back and grabbing great sound from the career of Sebastian Janikowski, looking back at the greatest Raider draft picks of all time. Thanks for joining us. Hopefully everybody's having a great summer. I'm always excited to talk to Josh Alpert from Pro Football Talk, kind enough to join us. And Josh, let's jump in. Your opinion on T.J. Watt and how this negotiation's going to go, because I can sit here and say, do you want to pay a guy who's at his prime, might be a little bit past it, or do you kind of grind him a little bit on the contract? Does he deserve a blank check? Because it seems like he's going to get a lot of money, but he wants the maximum amount available. What are you hearing?
Well, I would find it hard to believe that it doesn't end up with Lott signing some deal with the Steelers. Maybe it's a shorter one that gives him one more bite at the apple. But to go in with Aaron Rodgers and Jalen Ramsey and Jonnu Smith and DK Metcalf and make the kind of all-in moves they've made this year and then turn around to trade TJ Watt, it just doesn't add up. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I think they'll find some way to resolve this, because there's also the part where you're sending that message to your own players. Like, we'll go out and spend all this money on guys from other teams, but we won't take care of our own guys. And clearly the Steelers have done that over the years. It's a franchise that has been known for that. But to turn that page now with TJ Watt would be very odd for me.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because I'm out in Vegas with Max Crosby and I see what he does behind the scenes in practice, and he's elite, but the Raiders lost 10 in a row last year and only won 4 games. He got a big money extension. And I think we could all agree Myles Garrett's probably the best of this era, near the top of that, and that team doesn't compete and win. But TJ Watt's on a team that always win in 9 or 10 games, is in the postseason, and now it really feels like they're taking a big swing this offseason. So that is a strength for him and his agent going forward on trying to get something here before camp, right?
I think so. I think it's a big part of the argument that, look, you could trade TJ Watt and get 2, maybe 3 first-round picks. You could get a lesser player in return and some good draft capital, but how much does that help you win in 2025? I think that clearly that if the Steelers are going to go the Aaron Rodgers route, they want to win this year. They haven't won a playoff game in a long time. They make the playoffs every year, but they're sort of stuck at that plateau of it one and done. TJ Watt is going to help you win a game in the playoffs just as much as Aaron Rodgers is. So I think you find a way to figure that out, and maybe you have to trade him 2 years from now or let him go. But for right now, get it done.
Josh Alpert is our guest. Can you make the connection here to Micah Parsons and the scenario there where Jerry's putting his payroll into just 3 or 4 players, and Parsons should be getting that type of money too? But I think Watt's done more than Parsons, and Parsons is a great player. So after Watt, we're still in the Micah Parsons camp waiting to see what he gets, right?
Yeah, and that's just been the way the Cowboys have done business for the last few years. They wait too long to do deals. They wind up making it more expensive for them than they have to. You know, I'll draw the comparison. I just came out, Garrett Wilson and the Jets have agreed to an extension. This is the first year he's eligible, months before the first game of his fourth season. Lock him in now. If he's as good and continues to be as good as he's been to this point in his career, you're saving yourself money, you're keeping a player happy, and that's the way good teams get built. You look around the league, you look at the Eagles, this is how they build their team. So it's an odd one for both the Steelers and the Cowboys that they haven't found a way to get these things done at this point.
Yeah, you mentioned the point, and earlier today, Garrett Wilson on the 4-year, $130 contract extension, $90 million in guarantees as a wide receiver for the Jets. That's got to be the right guy at the right time, because the Jets have really struggled, and the amount of turnover they've had at the quarterback position has been a disaster there. But the Jets can't afford to let him go and have him disgruntled, which a lot of receivers are if they don't get that contract extension. But that team hasn't played in a lot of relevant games here, and he's getting what feels to be an NBA Supermax deal.
Yeah, and he's a player who, if he had played with better quarterback play over the last 3 years, I think you would say, wow, they got a bargain at that price. And I think that's what the Jets are looking for. They're looking to find the players to build their next winning team. It's been a long wait, and who knows that it'll work out. But let's say things don't go great with Justin Fields this year, and they are picking a quarterback at the top of next year's draft. You've made Garrett Wilson happy. You don't have to worry about him making a stir about holding out before his 5th year and all of the things that go along with waiting and waiting for a contract. He'll be there. He'll be part of the solution rather than another headache for them to sort out.
Josh Alper is our guest. Follow all his content at Pro Football Talk. A lot of good content all the time. What's up with the Niners with Juwan Jennings scheduled to make $7.5 million in the final year of his deal. He wants a new contract or a trade. And I find this interesting because of Brandon Ayuk and some of the chirping in the Niners. Everybody seems to get paid on the Niners if they're going to stay there, from Trent Williams, Christian McCaffrey, Brock Purdy. And now we're talking about a fourth receiver or a third receiver at best. All of a sudden, he's chirping about wanting new money here, and this is another thing that Kyle Shanahan has to deal with inside the organization before they get ready for camp.
Yeah, and I think some of that is, you know, you don't have Deebo Samuel anymore. Brandon Ayuk's not going to be ready for the start of the regular season. This is a leverage play by Jennings. He's a guy who has a window right now to perhaps cash in. I don't know that that'll work out for him. Maybe he gets a little bit more money in the short term, but to me, this is the problem that teams that have success for several years all have to deal with, is how do you take care of everyone? How do you make everyone happy? There's inevitably going to be people that aren't. Jennings may wind up being that guy, but it doesn't behoove the 49ers, who I think have some buyer's remorse on Ayuk already, to run out and pay Jennings at the top of the market. Maybe there's some way to make him happy, bridge something together, and figure it out another year from now. But I can't see them going big money for a guy who, you know, as you said, isn't that number one alpha receiver that you're looking for.
Josh, as we wrap this up, this is the time of year in the summer you get a lot of lists. Top 10 quarterbacks was just all over. Earlier today, you could tell producers on vacation, talents on vacation a lot. Everybody wants to put their list together, but I just finished watching quarterback. I watched every episode. It was Kirk Cousins, Jared Goff, and Joe Burrow, excuse me. And what was interesting about Goff was, man, he played great last year, and they won the division. They got the one seed, and they had the bye week. I don't know if you watched it yet. I don't want to completely spoil it for you, but when they got that bye week, they really seemed to step off the gas for a day or two, and they were talking about how many days they're going to get off and being able to sleep in. And then I forgot what the Commanders did to them. They boat raced them, and Goff wasn't terrible, but he wasn't great. And the Lions' defense got exposed in that game, and then they lost their coordinator, who's now the head coach of the Chicago Bears. Are you bullish on the Lions this offseason of immediately going back to an NFC championship game contender?
I think they're right. They're still right there. I think it's still a team that's in that window where you look at the talent across the board, and it has every chance to do it. I will be curious to see if they are, let's just say, 12-3 going into the final couple of weeks of the season, if they don't take the foot off the gas a little bit there in order to avoid exactly what you're talking about. You know, that week 18 game against the Vikings, they killed the Vikings, but it was a team that had so many injuries and so many players were banged up at a point where they weren't going to be able to get them back, that they really could have used perhaps. You know, you never want to say you give up the chance for a number one seed in a bye week. That's silly. But if there's a way to manage it a little bit differently and keep yourself in that position without perhaps emptying the tank in the regular season, that would be the one thing that I'd be curious to see if Dan Campbell has a change in his view, because he's not a guy who takes his foot off the gas. But now that he's been through it a couple of times, maybe he understands that discretion can sometimes be the better part of preparing your team to win a championship.
And Josh, lastly, do you think now the way the league is set up, and you're a young guy, you've been doing this a bit, but you got a long career in front of you, do you get excited about the preseason? I think the preseason is very important with the commerce of the league. You got a brand new team, you got a new coach, you got to have practice, you got to have games, you got to simulate games, you have to do this. We're not eliminating the preseason, but guys get hurt, and other teams that are bad got to play some of their quarterbacks and starters because the coaches are on the hot seat. What are you sensing this year as we come into the preseason? Status quo, or do you think some coaches are going to say, no, we better be good in the preseason. We're going to play our quarterback and our wide receiver maybe an extra half of a game?
My feeling on the preseason for the last few years has been Andy Reid and the Chiefs play their starters. They play them for a series or two, maybe a quarter, then they get them out. If you're looking for someone to emulate about how to get a team ready for the season in the 2020s, doesn't it have to be Andy Reid and the Chiefs? And So to me, I think teams have veered too far away, and there's sort of this, we'll play ourselves into shape in September. And I think for some teams that works. But for me, I want my guys getting some reps, getting some action, so that there is just that muscle memory being built up before the bullets start flying for real.
Thanks, Josh. Good to talk to you. Hopefully we catch up during training camp a little bit later on in the preseason. Thanks for the time.
My pleasure. Be well.
You got it. Josh Alper, Pro Football Talk. Appreciate him coming on here. Very interesting what he just said there from a Raider perspective. Very interesting. How do you not follow what Andy Reid does? Well, I think you could say that if you're Antonio Pierce. But Pete Carroll's going to do it his way because he's a Super Bowl champ. But Antonio Pierce, the way he wanted to do it with preseason, and Coach Pierce had some good assistants. Say what you will about Marvin Lewis, Joe Philbin still on the staff. They had a plan. Now we have a new head coach in Pete Carroll. He's going to do it his way. But very important what he said at the end. How do you not copy what Andy Reid does? I've always said I can't believe more Andy Reid's coaches aren't getting hired, and they just take everything that Andy Reid taught them and do the same thing. Go to a new team and just copy it all. So there was some breaking news as we started that interview. Garrett Wilson has just signed a monster contract extension with the Jets, the wide receiver who did play with Devontae Adams last year. 4 years, $130 million. Man, how big of a deal is that? For a guy who's pretty much never played in a game that mattered. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, everybody, but when's the last time you remember saying, oh, Garrett Wilson, other than making a great catch and being super talented, he's not playing in the AFC Championship game. He's not playing in elite games. And he gets this contract extension. You know why? Because he's too good to let go. If you're playing a really bad team and you're great, the best example that I could see almost maybe in my lifetime is Myles Garrett. Why would Myles Garrett continue to re-sign with the Browns? Because they give him money. Why doesn't he go, no thank you, no thank you, I'm going to go sign with the Chiefs or I'm going to go sign with the Ravens. They got a lot of money too, but you can make more money if you stay with the team that drafted you. So Wilson lands a $130 million contract extension. Man, that is a big deal. We're brought to you by Modelo. So quick story, I'm up there in New Paltz, New York, Bobby. I'm in New Paltz, and I'm hanging out, and my dad's there. And it was a great moment for me and Modelo. My dad is drinking a Modelo. 5, 10 years ago, he would not be. But his son, which would be me, represents Modelo. So my dad, who's 87 years old, was drinking Modelo with me up there in New Paltz, which was really cool. Had a great time with that. Modelo is now the number one beer in America. No surprise, it tastes great. I love everything about it, but it's the fighting spirit of Modelo that makes it so great. And I'm excited about that. So thanks to Modelo as they're back with us, like many of our partners. Again, on Raider Nation Radio, we got a couple of new announcements coming up on some new partners coming up, some people that we paused in the offseason, they're coming back. And we got to get this all together, man. We run a tight show here with our partners. We don't have a radio show without partners. And if we can help your company, help your business, we're here to do that because we are inside the Raider Nation and you want to be connected with Raider fans because they purchase and they are loyal to us here on Raider Nation Radio. When we come back, I'll wrap it up. I'll tell you about my Yankee Stadium experience. Thank God I wasn't cranky Yankee. It has a lot to do with how long do you wait online at a game for ice cream? I'm not an ice cream guy, I believe. I do most of my damage on cerveza and meat and potatoes. But I got a waiting on line for my nephew to get him ice cream at the Yankee game. It's 25 minutes I'll never get back in my life.
The 17th overall pick in the 2000 draft.
We were on a golf course in Daytona Beach. My agent called me. He's like, you got to come in. I was like, what are you talking about? It's just the first round. You know, nobody's going to draft a kicker in the first round. He's like, no, you have to come in. Yeah, 17th pick, Oakland Raiders call. I was really surprised.
Some of the records that Sebastian Janikowski holds: longest field goal in overtime, 57 yards. Most field goals in one quarter, 4. Most field goals of 50 yards or more in his career, 58.
Well, you know, as a rookie coming into Raiders, you know, they take care of me, especially, you know, there was a lot of older guys like Rich Gannon and Tim Brown, so they took me out under the wing. But, you know, people want to make fun of you, kicker going to the first round, but kind of went through it.
Great job by Bobby today. Well, you know, this is exactly where how we wanted to thread the needle, and we've done it the last couple of summers with you on Raider Nation Radio, because when we have a topic, we want to do it right, and we're looking back at the most influential players of all time. Some players will have some sound on. We'll have their draft call. We'll have something big that will make the show maybe more entertaining for you. We did a lot today on Sebastian Janikowski. Tomorrow, Pete Banaszak is something I'm working on. I knew Pete really well. I still know Pete well. We'll talk about his great career. Brought to you by Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers. One love when I was back east. Raising Cane's all over the East Coast. Love Raising Cane's, the premier chicken fingers. I had coleslaw when I was back at a barbecue, and I was like saying to my wife, man, this isn't Raising Cane's coleslaw. That's the best coleslaw that I love. Raising Cane's, one love, proud partner of our show. So a couple of other quick things here. What a match between Sinner and Alcaraz in Wimbledon in the final. I wish more people understood, not calling in on tennis, but these are two elite super tennis players who play in the Wimbledon final after the epic French Open final, where Sinner had multiple match points and couldn't beat Alcaraz. Well, Sinner finally wins it in Wimbledon.
A second championship point for Jannik Sinner from the far end. Takes aim and fires down the middle. He's done it! Jannik Sinner is the winner of Wimbledon, the first Italian ever to win a Wimbledon singles title. He can't believe it.
The first Italian to ever win at Wimbledon. Think of that for a second. Nadal, Federer. You look at people from all over the world, and first Italian to get it done. Sinner needed to win in this rivalry here. He talked about it afterwards as Alcaraz had his number.
When I was young, this was only a dream of the dream, because it was so far away where I'm from. So I'm just living them my dreams.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I watched a little bit of that in the airport. Real quickly, I went to Yankee Stadium. The Yankees won 8-0. It was Billy Joel bobblehead night. I did not wait in line for a bobblehead. A friend of mine who was there got me a Billy Joel bobblehead. I gave it to my nephew, my godson, and he came with me. So we're in the middle of the game, not in the middle of the game, third inning. I look at my wife. So I'm there with my wife. We got good seats, my godson, his brother, and another couple. And I said, I'm going to get you guys ice cream. You know, I'm the uncle. I'm going to be there, the godfather. I'm going to buy him ice cream. Bobby, I got in line. There were 70 people online. I said, we're not waiting on this line. I went to the next concourse. There was 50 people online. I went to the next concourse. There was 50 people online. I want to just say this, because I haven't been to Yankee Stadium in a while. I have never, with a capital N, never been to a sporting event where more people are online. Now, this is not a new stadium, but it's not an old one. Okay? So it's not old Yankee Stadium. I couldn't believe the amount of commerce they were doing. Everyone there was buying beer, popcorn, chicken fingers, ice cream. So I gave an ice cream cups to my godson. I got a cone for his dad. It was melting down his elbow by the time he brought it back. It wasn't as expensive as I thought. The money wasn't the issue. So as I'm in line, so I can see the game. I'm in line, but I can see it. I told my godson, I go to the rail and watch the game. I missed a home run, and I missed Judge going over the wall, making the greatest catch of his career. I had to watch it on TV in the stadium as I was online. Oh,
online buying ice cream. Not even beer, mind you, but ice cream.
There were good seats. You can't order ice cream at your seat, technically. You got to get up in line. So the moral of the story is, don't get up out of your seat to buy food at a game, unless you have kids. I mean, I don't know how anybody gets in line during a game. Halftime, all right, but that's when it's the most crowded.
Well, of course.
I went between the third and fourth inning thinking I'd get a little bit of a break. No repeat. But the Yankees won. I was happy. I was happy to be there because they won a game, and that team drives me nuts. They lose a lot of games dramatically. I saw a really good game. Q's coming up next. He has a big show. Thanks to Bobby. He's off tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll continue our summertime radio topic, the most influential Raider draft picks of all time. I thought we did a hell of a job today with Sebastian Janikowski. And thanks to those who participated. This is a participation show. I know it's summertime, but if you're out there listening, help us out with this a little bit, because these are good players we're looking back on. And we're trying to educate the new fans of the Raider Nation, especially those in Vegas. Have a great rest of the day. I'm on SiriusXM Monday and Tuesday night, 7 to 10 p.m. Pacific time on SiriusXM 82. We'll be back here tomorrow. Have a great day. The TV.